This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to The Doctor Is In with me, Dr. Janothra Archer-Cartwright. I'm a family medicine specialist. We're here every Tuesday evening to talk about all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. I hope you can hear me. Sometimes when I do this from here, I can't hear the music or the feedback. So hopefully we're on air. Thank you guys for joining us tonight. We've got an interesting topic. Well, it's kind of like something that's really pertinent right now because it's a topic that we've all heard about before, and you've all heard about stroke. It's a word that's kind of thrown around a lot, but I realize it seems to be an increasing amount anecdotally from what I've seen. There's been some interesting reports, some celebrities. It's alleged that even Jamie Foxx may have had a stroke recently, and that was something that was quite sudden. So stroke is something, it's popping up. It's something that we usually think about in our elderly population over the age of 65, but we're seeing younger and younger people having strokes, heart attacks, these types of things. So it's really important for us to do this topic because it's one of those terrible complications that we kind of mention every time when we tell you, you got to do this, you got to do that, you can have a stroke. But do we really talk about stroke and what a stroke is and what kind of like the complications that are a result to it? So it's one of those things that it can happen as a solo incident, and it can also be something quite devastating that lasts for a while and causes a lot of issues in your future and just kind of can be very debilitating. And so we're going to talk about stroke, and we're going to talk about, you know, what a stroke is, what are the signs of someone having a stroke, even if it's what we call a Passover stroke. You might have heard that in Bahamian terms. We're going to talk about what that may be, and, you know, what do we do, and how do we prevent these things from happening? So we're going to talk about that tonight. Of course, brought to you by Medical Concierge Services. We are a medical healthcare facility. We're located in the Bahamas Heart Center. So if you're looking for a primary care doctor, that's definitely the place to be. Our phone number is 326-1521. We also have a WhatsApp line, 432-4010. And you can find us on Facebook and Instagram. If you're looking for us on Instagram, it's going to be medical_concierge_services. And if you're looking for us on Facebook, just Medical Concierge Services is fine. We also have a website, mcsfamilymedicine.com, and you can find out a little bit more information about some of our other services. You can also sign up for NHI there or through our WhatsApp line, or you can give us a call or even give us an email. So yes, we do NHI, and we do have a few spots left, and there is another doctor that works with me. And so we can accommodate you as best that we can if you're still searching for an NHI doctor. And it's really easy to sign up for NHI. All we need is simple information, have your NIB number, name, address, age, those things. And usually if you can get in early in the month, you get in the next month. If not, it takes about a month. And so it's a very easy process, and we can help you with it. And we can send all your information to NIB and ensure that you are signed up correctly and you're with the doctor of your choice. So there it is. So tonight's topic, I'm going to talk about stroke. And so I really want to start with what a stroke really is, because, you know, it's something that we talk about and we don't really mention what it could be. And I don't know if everybody has really an understanding of what a stroke really is. And so similarly to a heart attack, a stroke is like a heart attack for the brain. And what's happening is that our brains, which is a very, very important organ, it controls our thoughts, it controls our movements, it controls our breathing, it really controls everything in the body. So it's like the central unit of the body. Everything functions, comes through the waves that are created in the brain. So that's really the center of everything happening. And so each part of the brain has a specific role it plays. So the front part of our brain is really involved in thinking processes and memories and these types of things. And then you have different parts of your brains that are, that work with movement and movement for certain parts of the body, certain sides of the body. Hearing, visual, it's all connected to the brain through nerves that stem from our brain and our brain stem. So very, very important organ. So you don't want to damage an organ like the brain. And basically, that's what a stroke is. So you need blood to flow to your brain for your brain to work correctly, right? So your brain is sitting there. It gets its nutrients like every other cell. It gets that from blood going to the brain. And then the blood carries all the nutrients and the oxygen that the brain would need to function and do its daily activity, which is to really do everything in your body to really make sure everything is working correctly. So if you lose blood flow to any part of your brain, you're going to have an effect in your body. And this can happen in various different ways. You can have blood vessel, one of the little tubes that carries blood to your brain. If that gets blocked, then you would have an issue of oxygen getting to the brain. Also, if one of those blood vessels was to break or pop or bleed in some way, then also you wouldn't get proper delivery of oxygen to the brain and you'd have that blood kind of seeping into the brain area. So these are very, very serious things. And strokes are life-threatening emergencies and they need immediate medical care and attention is extremely, extremely critical. I mean, this is something that you can't wait on because you can have permanent damage to parts of your brain, and that's where you really get some serious problems. So stroke is a life-threatening condition. It happens when parts of your brain don't have enough blood flowing through it, and most commonly it happens because it's blocked or there is this bleeding. And without a steady supply of blood, the brain cells, the cells that make up your brain, they start to die. They start to die from a lack of oxygen. And with that death also goes the functioning of the parts of your body that are linked to that part of your brain. So it's an emergency. And if you think someone is having a stroke, you really need to call emergency services right away because even a stroke that happens for a short period of time, even if people recover, some of them will have disabilities, especially if that time goes fast. So there is kind of like an acronym to recognize some of the warning signs of having a stroke. And that acronym is called BE-FAST. And the B stands for be watchful of sudden loss of balance. So like we talked about, different parts of the brain really has a priority over different functioning. So if you have a sudden loss in balance for no particular reason, no other reason, that is something to be cautious of. The E in BE-FAST looks out for sudden loss of vision in one or both of your eyes. So if you start experiencing double vision or blurriness in one eye, or you completely lose the vision in that eye, even for a short period of time, you do want to go and get that checked out. If you think someone's had a stroke, you're still not sure what's going on, you would ask the person to smile so fast. Look for a droop on the side of both sides of their face. This is, can be a sign of muscle weakness or paralysis, and this is a really easy way that we kind of figure out that there's something wrong. And this can be subtle, and sometimes what we look for is we call the nasal folds in the face, some of them being blunted. So if you see one is very creased and the other one, it seems very blunt, or you can't see it, or asymmetrical look inside the face, and it's a good chance that that person may have a stroke. What that identifies is the muscles that are controlled by that particular part of the brain may not be functioning. So to smile, you have to use your muscles in your face. And so if some of those muscles are paralyzed or not able to move, then you will see a difference. And that's the thing about the brain, is that each half of the brain controls another side of the body. And then in different levels of the brainstem control upper and lower aspects of the body. So we can tell a lot about how a person has signs or symptoms, which part of the brain has been affected. So the A in the BFAS is a person having a stroke often has muscle weakness on one side. You want to ask them to raise their arms. And if they have one-sided weakness and they didn't have this before, one arm will stay high while the other will either sag, droop, or they won't be able to lift it. And that allows us to say which side of the body was affected, which side of the brain was affected, and how badly it was affected. So those are the things, one of the things that you would look at if you think, hey, this person has had a stroke, I'm not sure. You can do these testing before you even call the doctor, or in the midst of calling so that you have more information. The S in BFAS stands for strokes. So often the cause of a person to lose their ability to speak, so the S is for speech, they might slur, they might, their speech, or have trouble choosing the right words, a type of aphasia that kind of happens. So not only will maybe their speech change and they wouldn't be able to say words the way that they were before, sometimes they're not able to choose the correct word. So if they wanted to say, I want to get an apple, they might say pen, lift, chair. And you're like, what? What are you saying? So because the brain does do all the different functions, thinking, putting words together, memory, all of those things. So anything really can be affected. And for some people, it may just be changes in the speech, because it might just be a specific part of the brain that lost oxygenation. And so that can be a key sign in a lot of cases. It's just a change in the way that the person was speaking, and it can be quite subtle. So you listen and you say, oh, why are they saying those words kind of off like that? And they themselves may say, oh, it feels a little harder to talk, or I can't quite grasp the words, things like that, especially in older people or people who've had a lot of chronic illnesses. This may be the one and only sign that you may actually see or be able to recognize. Time is critical. So the T in BFAS is time. You don't want to waste time. You want to get help right away. Look at your watch, and if you're able to tell when these symptoms came along, okay, we had some issues on broadcasting live, so I'm hoping that everything is okay in the station. And hope you guys can all hear me. So yeah, that's kind of the things that you want to do right away at home, that you can kind of really just assess if someone's even had a stroke. So who gets affected by strokes? Anybody can really have a stroke. Strokes can happen in children and adults, but there are some people who are really at a greater risk of having a stroke. Strokes are more common usually later in life, as we talked about. Two-thirds of strokes happen in people over the age of 65, maybe even a bit more. And so that has usually been the common thread of strokes, that it happens in older people. And so over the age of 65, and then, of course, there are certain conditions that are be more prone. And that's why I talk about a lot of these conditions quite often, because these are the conditions that would cause you to be more at risk of having a stroke. And of course, that includes high blood pressure or hypertension, your high cholesterol, which is, or hyperlipidemia, your type 2 diabetics, persons with atherosclerosis, which usually comes from either hypertension or cholesterol. If you've had a history of having a stroke in the past, you're more inclined to have another one. If you've had a heart attack, or if you have a heart rhythm like atrial fibrillation, and you may have needed medication for that, or it's uncontrolled, you are a person that would be more at risk for having a stroke. So it's really important to control these different risk factors. And this is why we try to avoid people having multiple risk factors that can lead to detrimental things like stroke. So how common is stroke? Strokes are extremely common worldwide. Strokes rank second among the top causes of death. And if we look to the United States, strokes are, it's really also a leading cause of disability around the world. And I think that's where it's really becomes an obvious problem when you see people post a stroke, especially if it was a very large stroke. It can leave people bedridden, not able to use certain and we'll talk a little bit about what people do in terms of rehabilitation, but some of these effects can be permanent. So when you have things that are permanent, that's very costly for the family. It's very time consuming. People have limitations on the things that they can do. So your quality of life really starts to change. And that's why you want to avoid those. So strokes are to your brain similar, as we said, like a heart attack. And when you have a stroke, you can lose a blood supply to these areas. It keeps that brain area from getting oxygen. And without oxygen, the affected brain cells become oxygen starved and stop working properly. So if your brain cells go too long without oxygen, they will die. Okay. And if brain cells in an area die, then the damage becomes permanent and you may lose the ability that that area once controlled, as I talked about. However, restoring blood flow may prevent that damage from happening. Or it may limit how severe that damage may be. And that's why time is so critical when we're talking about treating strokes. So there are different types of strokes. So there are two main types that strokes can happen, and we call them ischemic and hemorrhagic. And with an ischemic stroke, is when the cells don't get enough blood flow to the supply them with oxygen. This usually happens because there is some type of block to the vessels cutting off. And this makes up a majority of the strokes happen this way, about 80%. This is really the most common type that you hear a lot of people talk about. And it usually happens because of one of these reasons. First, it could be there's a formation of clot in the brain or thrombus. And this can be linked to health conditions, clotting problem, clotting conditions, medications, or some other thing that's gone wrong genetically. Some people are more prone to clots. And so forming a clot in the vessels of the brain or a thrombosis would cause that blood supply to be cut off. If a fragment of a clot from elsewhere in the body was to break free and it travels through your body, it can get stuck in the brain, and that's when we call it an embolism. And so you can have a clot somewhere else in a bigger vessel and may not be a big issue there. But if some of that breaks off and it gets to blood vessels in the brain, which could be a lot smaller, then that little emboli can cause you to have a blockage. Small vessel blockages or lacuna strokes, which can happen when you have long-term untreated blood pressure. So this happens a lot in hypertensives and persons with cholesterol or high blood sugar, have these small vessel blocks. Also, a lot of unknown reasons, and these are called cryptogenic strokes. Even people aren't sure really what the cause was. It could be that the person was seemingly healthy and they had a stroke, but these are all the other things that could happen. And sometimes they're even linked to certain medications. And if you read the panel of some certain people who already are disposed plotting to have these problems. So hemorrhagic stroke is the other type that makes up the other 20%. And this causes bleeding in or around the brain. And this happens in two particular ways. You can have bleeding inside of your brain, which we call the intracerebral bleeding. And this happens when a blood vessel inside of your brain tears or breaks open. Bleeding, and that puts a lot of pressure on the tissue surrounding the brain. So that area gets really compressed. That becomes a problem. And you have similar symptoms as if you had a clotting thing happening. These can be extremely dangerous because we'll explain later when it comes to treatment. It's a lot harder to treat these type of bleeds in the brain. Then the other type of bleeding that you can have in the brain is called bleeding into the subarachnoid space, which is a space that's between the brain and the outer covering. And if blood kind of gets into this thin layer of tissue, it kind of goes all around the brain, and that space, which is just right underneath the little layer around your brain, that can cause a lot of problems and damage the blood vessels that pass through this subarachnoid membrane can cause hemorrhaging. And this bleeding into the space puts a lot of pressure on the brain tissue, and that pressure itself can cause the brain to have similar effects as if the blood supply is being cut off. And of course, maybe those blood vessels that broke were supplying different type parts of the brain. And so those areas will be affected. And it depends on what the functioning of those areas were. It's a problem. And if it's a bleed that's in between the layer, you can see it can affect a lot of different areas at the same time. Depending on how large this bleed is, will really play a role in the effects of what's happening. So some of the symptoms, as we talked about, because of different areas of the brain, cause these different abilities to be impacted. So stroke symptoms depend on that affected area. For example, if you have a stroke in the Broca area, it's a part of the brain that controls how you use muscles in your face and in your mouth. And that's why people would have the facial paralysis issues. And that's why they would also have slurring of their words and have trouble speaking when they have a stroke. So it affects the way that people are able to put their words together, how they're speaking, because the muscles in the face are affected. And some of the other symptoms that can be involved is the one-sided weakness, or what we call paralysis of the body, so that people either are weak on one side and they don't have the strength that they had before, or they completely lose all functioning and movement on a particular side of the body. You can also have aphasia, which is difficulty with or the loss of speaking ability, as we mentioned, slurred or garbled speech, or through the loss of muscle control on one side of the face. You can have a sudden or partial or total loss of various senses. So vision, hearing, smell, taste, or touch, all of those sensations can have problems. You can have vision problems, blurred or double vision, loss of coordination, clumsiness, or we medically call that ataxia or a lack of balance. It can affect you by causing dizziness or vertigo, where you feel like you're spinning or the room is spinning. It can cause nausea and vomiting. Some people also, especially if they're having hemorrhagic stroke, they can have a stiff neck, so really, really stiff neck. They can have emotional instability or personality changes. So you see, especially in elderly people, if you see like a total change in their personality, they just seem like a different person. This could be a sign that they've had stroke. You can have confusion or agitation. seizures, which, you know, you are losing oxygen to the brain, so seizures or compressions of the brain, as well as memory loss or amnesia. So if there's a sudden loss of memory, this can be an early sign of a stroke. Headaches, which are usually going to be really, really severe, or like one maybe described as really bad or the worst headache ever. Passing out or fainting. So anyone who passes out or loses consciousness, they should really be seen right away, go to A&E. They would need to have that checked out, or if someone goes into a sudden coma. Now, I mentioned before that I would speak a little bit on what we call a passover stroke, or in medical terms, we call it a transient ischemic attack, or a TIA. And that is really a mini stroke, as many behaviors may say, because the effects may be temporary. And these are often warning signs. So if a person's had a very high risk of having a stroke in the near future, it may just be a warning that they have these kind of little passover strokes. And that's why it's important to know the signs and symptoms, because sometimes they can have these little changes and they kind of get better. And so families feel, hey, that wasn't really anything, but really should get them checked out. Because of that, a person who has a TIA needs to see the emergency doctor right away. That is still an emergency call, even if the symptoms were to go away fairly quickly. So if someone wakes up, they say, I'm blind in one eye, I don't know what to do, or, you know, the slurred speech or something, and it goes away. You might even be driving them to the emergency, or the ambulance is on the way, and they say, okay, I feel a lot better, or that still should get worked up, because weak signs, we can tell perhaps that person did have a small or mini stroke. And that is a great sign that they may have impending stroke coming, or a larger stroke coming. And so we're going to take a quick break. We're going to open the phone lines when we come back. And we're going to talk about what causes stroke, how do we prevent that from happening, and other related conditions. So I just want to take a quick break on the Doctors In With Me, Dr. D. Archer. We'll see you back momentarily.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to the Doctors In with me, Dr. Dinotha Roger Cartwright. Tonight we're talking about stroke. We talked about the different types of stroke and how to identify some of the signs and symptoms that someone may be having a stroke, because that person may need emergency services right away. We want to open the phone lines as we kind of talk about some of the treatments and how do we prevent stroke. So 322-6232-325-4316, 325-4259. I hope everybody got that. Sometimes they say it pretty fast. I wanted to open the lines a little earlier because sometimes I open it a little late. I just really, but 322-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. So we talked about stroke. We talked about the different types of stroke. And we talked about some of the common signs and symptoms that may be related to having a stroke. We mentioned about the transient ischemic attacks, and these being mini strokes, or what we behemoths call Passover strokes, and their effects may be temporary, but what is very cautioning about them is they may be a sign that the person is at risk of having a really big stroke in the future, or what we call a real stroke, where we have could have some permanent damage. So what really causes strokes? We talked briefly about ischemic strokes and hemorrhagic strokes, and they can happen for a variety of different reasons, mainly because of blood clots. And these blood clots can be created by atherosclerosis, which could be plaques. And if a person has any type of clotting disorder, if they have a rhythm problem in the heart, like atrial fibrillation, if they have a heart defect, like an atrial septal defect or something wrong with the ventricles, these are the little valves that help to pump blood through the heart. If you have any of those heart conditions, that can make you a little more prone. And microvascular ischemic disease, which is a blockage of smaller vessels in the brain, all of these things put people at risk for having a stroke. So the hemorrhagic strokes, however, it also has several other reasons, including high blood pressure. So that's kind of like those really sudden, you know, his pressure went really up high, and you know, basically the blood vessel, was affected by that. People with brain aneurysms can lead to hemorrhagic strokes, and some of those can be genetic problems. Brain tumors, including people who may have cancer, and diseases that weaken or cause unusual changes in the blood vessels in your brain. They can also create these problems. So there's some other conditions that are related to increasing the risk of having a stroke, and they include alcohol use disorder. And so people who abuse, severely abuse alcohol, they can put themselves at risk of having a stroke. Talked about people with high blood pressure. That's really one of the ones that are on top of the list, high cholesterol. Some people who have migraine headaches, they can have symptoms similar to a stroke, and people with migraines, especially migraines with auras, also have a high risk of stroke at some point in the life. And some people theorize it's because some people with migraines experience spasms, and some of them are similar to what's causing the migraine can also end up causing stroke-like symptoms. Type 2 diabetics, if you're not really well controlled, sugar in the blood really can cause a lot of damage. And so it's important to have these conditions properly controlled. Smoking basically is a risk factor for any chronic disease, any problem, any major issue. If there's one thing that you're going to give up in life, if you're a smoker, it needs to be smoke. So smoking, any form of tobacco use, vaping, all of that stuff, that is definitely going to put you up on the risk factors for having a stroke. And drug misuse, so including prescription drugs and non-prescription drugs. So people who misuse drugs in any particular way, they're going to have increased risks of having a stroke. And so it's possible a thing that's passed on to other people. It really has to do with what's going on in your body. And so how do we diagnose stroke? And we're going to talk about that a little bit. And this is why it's very important to get to the hospital right away. There's a combination of both neurological examinations. So the doctor would test all the things, the functions related to the brain. And then, of course, diagnostic imaging and other tests that we would do to kind of ensure that what we think is happening is really what's happening. And so during that neurological exam component, you're going to be asked certain questions as a person who's had a stroke or the person who's there with you. And from the history information, we go on to like a physical exam, which will give us a lot more information about what's happening with that particular person. And by doing that, we get a lot more information, and we can determine even sometimes what type of stroke a person may have had, just by the information and how they present. And so we look for those signs, and we look for how the brain works, and then what's happening with that person, and we kind of put that all together. There are also some really important tests that are done. So it's common that if we suspect that you've had a stroke, that you may need a CT scan of the brain. So that's a big scan that you go in and we take a look at what's happening in the brain. We'll do various blood tests, checking for signs of heart damage, any signs of infection, checking for the ability of your blood to clot or not to clot. Look at your sugar levels, how well your kidney and your liver is working, give us clues to what may have caused the problem. We would also do an ECG, which is kind of like a tracing of the heart, you might hear people say, and we look to see if the heart may be the source of a particular problem that's causing someone to have a stroke. You may also need an MRI to provide additional information, and what we call an EEG in case you had a seizure or we think that you might had a resulting seizure because of that. So there's a lot of workup that's involved. It's a very expensive process. And so it's really something that you would want to prevent as best as possible. And how is it treated? Well, with ischemic strokes or strokes that are due to the clots in the brain, the top priority is trying to get circulation. So we want to get the blood back to the brain. We want to make sure those affected areas get cleared. And we need to do this as fast as possible so that there is no permanent damage. They want to restore that circulation and usually involve certain medications called thrombolytics. And we use that medication as well as some catheterization procedures to actually clear those little vessels inside your brain. So as you can see, that's a really expansive thing to do. With hemorrhagic strokes, they're a bit more complicated. The treatment really depends on the location that those would have happened, the severity of the bleeding, and we really want to reduce the pressure that's on the brain. And the top priority is to reduce the amount of bleeding and keep it from getting worse. So a treatment option to improve the clotting so that the bleeding will stop. This may require a more open surgery, sometimes to relieve the pressure of the brain and to kind of remove that blood that's been accumulated, because that can be problematic. There's various medications that we use to treat stroke with, and stroke that you may have had. And so, it's not the same for everybody. We talked about the thrombolytics, which are the medications that stop the blood clot. And people have been on things like warfarin or also those types of things. But they have thrombolytics that they use in hospital that they're going to sometimes even put through the blood themselves. And in a hemorrhagic stroke, you want to manage the blood pressure. If the clot is still there, then it needs to be removed as quickly as possible. And if it's a hemorrhagic stroke, you need reversal of any medications that may have caused the bleeding. And of course, blood pressure management and both. And for hemorrhagic stroke, you want to use medications or surgery to reduce the pressure inside your skull. And thrombolytics just means, something that will lyse or cut and dissolve or remove that. And instead of sometimes going in there, we use medication that will do that. And of course, mechanically, we can go in there and also remove that. And your blood pressure management is going to be one of the most important things, especially in the first few hours. Doctors are going to really kind of look at how to bring down your blood pressure slowly, so that we can take you out of that range of having a stroke. And I point this out to my patients quite often when they come into the clinic, because we have these different levels. We have a really colorful chart inside in the office that just shows you where you are in terms of your blood pressure. So like normal pressure, low pressure, if you're like pre-hypertensive, if you're stage one, stage two, stage three. And I always kind of point out to people, like when you're blood pressure is at a certain point, this is where a lot of people have strokes. And a lot of people don't understand that. They say, and I don't feel anything or I don't do anything, but, you know, these are the sudden effects of having your blood pressure really, really high, or spiking up high, or consistently high. So blood pressure control is a really important part of that. That's what you have to look at. So your body's clotting ability relies on a process called homeostasis to stop the bleeding and repair injuries. By supporting homeostasis involves infusing different medications that make it easier for clotting to happen or not to happen, including vitamin K therapy, thrombin clotting factor infusions, and more. And these treatments are common with hemorrhagic strokes and can help control bleeding. So we can give you medication that would help your body normally kind of stop the bleed from happening. And in some cases, persons do need surgery. There's a lot of supportive treatment and other methods that go along with the treatments to help you avoid other complications. So your healthcare provider can tell you more about these things if you have had a stroke, or you can come in for a consultation. Stroke rehabilitation. So we talked about the fact that this can be really debilitating, and there can be a lot of long-term effects of having a stroke. And so rehabilitation is extremely important in a person who's had a stroke. You wanna help that person to recover and to adapt to the changes that have happened in their brain. And this is especially true when it comes to helping them regain their abilities that they had before they had a stroke. And so stroke rehabilitation is a major part of recovery for most people who have had a stroke. And the rehabilitation can take multiple different forms. Most likely, they are targeted to the problems that a person might have had. So if they've had problems with their speech therapy, and that would help them to regain their language and speaking abilities and improve and control the muscles that help them to breathe, eat, drink, and swallow. Everybody knows about physical therapy, and this can help in their improve and regain their ability to use their hands, their feet, and even their lungs if their breathing was affected. And this can help with balance issues, muscle weakness, and many other things. Occupational therapy is another type of therapy that's very useful. And we use this type of therapy to really retrain the brain so that you can go about your daily activities. And this therapy is especially helpful with improving precise hand movements and muscle control. So when we think occupational, we think about function. And so how do we make sure that you can function and do your daily activities, like feeding yourself and brushing your hair, and those things take intricate small muscle. You have a separate therapy called occupational therapy. There's also cognitive therapy, and this can be helpful if you're having memory problems. And it can also help if you're having difficulties with activities that require focus or concentration, things that you would have been able to do before, but may not be able to do now. And so, like, sadly, in the Bahamas, it's really hard and really expensive to get all of those therapies. But really, for proper stroke management, you would need to have cognitive, usually occupational, physical therapy, and speech therapy if you've had those things in place. I think there are some services, government services, that do provide. It's very difficult sometimes to get in, but it's very important. And this can be the difference between someone going back and being able to do a lot of things that they did previously, or, you know, being kind of stuck in a debilitated state. There are a lot of, when you go to like different countries, the US, they'll have even more specialized areas that can take care of some of these things. Some of the complications, of course, side effects of treatment. There can be side effects of stroke treatment, and that depends greatly on the type of stroke that you've had, the type of medication, or the things that you've had to do from there. So there can be complications of the stroke itself, and then, you know, usually these are life-threatening, so sometimes some of the medications and things that have to be done also come with their own complications. Have that brain surgery, you know. I would say one of the, no, I won't mention that because that's pretty gross, that grossed me out, but One of the first times I was in the hospital before I even became a doctor, was dealing in ICU with, that was a lot for me. That was a lot for me. You know, I think that's why I kind of got out of the hospital. You can't handle all that stuff sometimes. So how can we take care of ourselves? How can we manage symptoms? A stroke is basically, we talked about a life-threatening thing, and it's something that you need to call for emergency assistance right away. The longer it takes for the stroke to be treated, the greater the risk of permanent damage. And so, you know, some people feel better after getting treatment like right away, and some people take quite a while to kind of get those things back together. And so how do we reduce your risk of having a stroke or prevent a stroke from happening completely? So there are many things that you can reduce your risk of having a stroke. And whilst this doesn't mean that it's not 100% that you will prevent the stroke, it can lower your risk if you take certain actions. And these are some of the things that we talk about a lot of times on the show, but we can never emphasize more, because as you can see, you will really want to avoid things like having a stroke. Having the stroke is kind of, you know, late on the chart. You want to be preventative. You want to do the things that are going to keep you healthy. So you want to make improvements to your lifestyle. Eating healthy, diet, adding exercise daily to your routine. These things are going to really be helpful. Getting enough sleep, the recommended 7 to 8 hours, important. One of the things that we talked about earlier, avoiding risky life choices, or making changes to your behavior, such as smoking, using tobacco, if you're using any drugs, vaping, recreational drugs, the use of overdoing it with prescription medication, because some people overuse prescription medication. I say use medication only as needed, right? So if you have a problem and you have to constantly be using medication, some people use other people's medication, which is a terrible practice. Come in and be seen so that you can see really what's going on and take care of that. The misuse of alcohol. So if you're abusing alcohol, it's going to increase your risk of having a stroke. And so you want to cut back on alcohol. And I've actually kind of cut out alcohol almost completely recently. I would drink occasionally, but even lately, I've really kind of like even on about, you know, not really indulging at all, because you come to realize that a lot of this stuff is really, really unnecessary. And what are you doing it for? It's not really good for you. And it only causes problems as you get older. So it's important to stop these or never even start. And if you struggle with any of those, you want to talk to your healthcare provider because it's that important. And they can offer you guidance and resources that can help change your lifestyle and avoid these habits. You want to manage any of your health conditions and your risk factors. There are several that we talked about, mainly obesity, any abnormal heart rhythms. So you want to take your medication currently appropriately. And you want to keep up with your doctor's appointments. So if you have, especially if you have multiple chronic illnesses, a lot of people like to just go to one doctor. But if you have specialty doctors as well, so if you have a cardiologist and you have your family physician, you know, you want to go to both of those doctors to make sure. And you won't have to go to the specialist as often if you have a family physician. But, you know, you want to keep in contact, especially if you have like an arrhythmia or a problem where you would need access to seeing a specialist. So keeping, if you have sleep apnea, you need to get that addressed. If you have high blood pressure, of course, you need to have that controlled. Type 2 diabetes, we talked about high cholesterol, which all increase your risk of having an ischemic stroke. If you have one or more of these conditions, it's very important that you manage them correctly, especially by taking your medication on time. And if you're on blood thinners, a lot of people ask me who've had heart attacks and strokes, and they come, you know, after they've seen the specialist and they're now like in my care. And they're like, oh, can I stop the blood thinners? No, a lot of times you cannot stop blood thinners, because if you are prone to having a clot, if you're prone to having a stroke and you stop them, then your risk will go back up. And so I know it's very tricky being on blood thinners, and it's something you have to manage and watch and make sure that it's on in for some drugs in the right range. And taking it consistently is super important, but you know, it's to have a stroke, a second stroke usually, it's usually worse than the first one. So if you have one or more of these conditions, of course, we talked about just kind of managing those appropriately and doing that. And what you want to doing that earlier in life, you can avoid severe stroke problems rather than having them later in life if you take care of yourself. So managing your medication, managing whatever you're provided to take, it's going to be super important. So is there anything I should eat or drink with this condition? If you are at risk of any kind of stroke, you really want to sit down with your healthcare provider and let them recommend changing your diet to avoid increases in blood pressure. Examples including beverages that contain a lot of caffeine, such as coffee, tea, soft drinks, foods that contain a lot of salt or sodium that can increase your blood pressure, foods that are high in saturated fats, such as fried foods. A lot of the fast food is just killing us, right? So we really have to cut down. If you're eating fast food every day, you know, you're really putting yourself at risk. And I think it's a part of the reason why we're seeing a lot of younger people with strokes. Of course, there are some other things, some elephants in the room that we really don't talk about, but we know that people are just not eating the way we should. And we really don't have access to the quality of food. And I would hope that, you know, we would take eating healthy more serious in this country, especially after the pandemic, because, you know, being cut off in these chain supplies and stuff, having your own source of food is being able to get really good, high quality food that's like non-GMO and all that stuff. Also very important. So you want to cut out those foods that are high in saturated fat. You want to cut out alcohol, recreational stimulants. They mentioned cocaine, amphetamines, and stuff like that. We don't really do that as much here, but you know, all of those things can be very problematic. So if you've had a stroke, many factors affect what you can expect, such as how big is it, where is it in your brain, and there are also some key differences between having what we call an ischemic and a hemorrhagic stroke. And so those with an ischemic stroke, more severe ischemic stroke, it's worse. The more severe, the worse the damage, really. And the brain is more severely damaged at that point. And you will, and it's possible that you can lose certain abilities. As you get medical attention for that stroke and symptoms, the better your chances are. And when we talk about persons who've had hemorrhagic stroke, these usually cause much worse symptoms, especially when bleeding is more severe. These symptoms of hemorrhagic stroke tend to get worse very quickly. And people with this type of stroke tend to cause severe headaches, seizure, and may even be inside of a coma, like the patient that I saw when I was rotating through the hospital, just as like a student, just before I was even a medical student. When I did a year in the hospital, I think I probably was only about 19 at the time, probably was in the University of Bahamas. So yeah, I did a summer in the hospital and I shadowed a couple of doctors. And this was even before I really thought about being a doctor, but I guess it was all adding up from there. So how long can a stroke last before we kind of tie this up? A stroke lasts as long as there is lack of blood flow to the ND part of that would continue until the brain cell in the affected areas of your brain die or cause permanent damage. So even after you receive treatment for a stroke, it's common for these effects to linger for a while, and most people will take weeks, even months to recover. And most of progress and recovery happens within the first 6 to 18 months. So you really want to be aggressive with treating any problems that you may have in the first 6 to 18 months, because that's the greatest chance for any kind of recovery. Further progress is possible, but after that, it can be harder to achieve and it takes a lot longer. So if you're going to have therapy and those types of things, you want to get them earlier rather than later. It's going to be a lot more effective and helpful. you know, people think about, like, you know, after you've had these things, how long does it take to really get back on your feet, go back to work, go back to school, and you will be the best person, and it's different for different people. But it's important not to push yourself too hard without enough time or time to recover or not getting the right therapy. This can cause you to have another stroke. So you want to relax, you want to take your time. I know it's a stressful point in your life, but take that time to kind of get everything together, get everything under control, focus on those things, and then get the help that you need. So strokes have the potential to cause death, and when they're severe or they go too long without treatment. However, the outlook can still be very widely depending on many different factors. Those factors include where in your brain a stroke happens, how severe it may be, your health history, and a lot more, right? And a lot is coming from the Cleveland Clinic. So your healthcare provider is the best person to really help you with that. And you need to take your medication after you've had a stroke. So if you were someone who didn't take your medication before, you really, really have to take your medication. You have to go to your rehabilitation and your therapy appointments. Very, very important. And it might be frustrating, but these are the things that are going to get you better. And you also have to think about your mental health, because depression and anxiety are extremely common after people have strokes. So experiencing these things doesn't mean that you're weak or you're hopeless, but if you let them go untreated, it could be a problem. So if you're down or you're feeling depressed or really anxious after having a stroke, you should talk to a healthcare provider and make sure that so that they can recommend things to keep your mental health. And it's always a concern. So you want to talk to someone who's listening and who's understanding. You want to make the recommended lifestyle changes as best as you can. Dealing with your blood pressure, your sugar, your cholesterol, doing those things is going to help you decrease your chances of having another stroke. So managing these can help you avoid a stroke in the future. And like you said, quitting those tobacco products are going to be really, really important. It's important if you have chronic disease to go in and see your doctor. There are a lot of other complications that can happen if you've had a stroke. So some people fare better or worse than others. And if you ended up in hospital, so you can have a pneumonia, you can have a DVT, you have a pulmonary embolism, a heart attack, and seizures, as we talked about. And so all of those things would have to be managed, okay? But there are treatment options, and the faster the better that you get in, it's best. And so you really want to get that treatment appropriately. And if you know that someone around you or in the home with someone and you think that they might have had a stroke, you want to call emergency services right away. You want to get them in an ambulance to the hospital as quickly as possible. And so that was our topic on stroke tonight. I hope that was helpful. I hope you take the preventative approach, because it is a very serious disease, a serious condition. We're seeing a lot of young people who are having strokes and heart attacks. And so do not wait until you've had that, you know, transient or, you know, small stroke before you make those changes. Make those changes today so that we can have a healthier and more productive Bahamas. Okay. So that's what we really want. That is the point of the show. I hope this has all been helpful for you. And I want you to thank you for listening. That's pretty much the end of the show. I hope you guys were able to garner some really good information. And I want to thank Medical Concierge Services for making this happen. And as they say, if you want to be a sponsor, you can reach out to us. If you want to be a part of the show, if you like the topics, let us know. So we'll see you next week on Guardian Radio 96.9 with me, Dr. Denotra Archer Cartwright, on The Doctor Is In. Good night.